teaching of the Buddha was like this. He was dying. He said to everyone, when you see the Dharma, you will see me. When you see me, you will see the Dharma. That the real body of the Buddha will be seen when you practice and you make the life of Buddha alive. And it isn't really dependent on Shakyamuni Buddha, which is why we're here over 2,500 years later. And, you know, and to quote the very big first paragraph of the Shishogi, the most important question for all Buddhists is how to understand birth and death completely. For then, should you be able to find the Buddha within birth and death, they both vanish. All you have to do is realize that birth and death, as such, should not be avoided, and they will cease to exist. For then, if you understand that birth and death are nirvana itself, there is not only no necessity to avoid them, but also nothing to search for that is called nirvana. The understanding of the above breaks the chains that bind one to birth and death. Therefore, this problem, which is the greatest in all of Buddhism, must be completely understood. And to understand it, we have to kind of see deeper what's, you know, from a Buddhist point of view, what is real? What are we looking at? What's going on in our lives? And really, to understand that, we have to understand what we're clinging to, because that's what's going to die, the things that we're clinging to. And when, from a Buddhist point of view, when you stop clinging to things, then actually you can awaken to what your real body and your real home, and find that there's nothing to fear and nothing to desire. So for all of us, that's the most important question, because that's really what we're suffering from. You know, as in one Buddhist scripture, they put it very nicely, you're lost in a dream of birth and death. I always like that expression, the dream of birth and death. Not that it's not real, but the meaning you give it. Like, obviously, you know, the moment you were born, people could say, wow, you're going to die. You know, it's an obvious truth. But to us, that's like the fact that it seems like this, there's some deep meaning there, is one of the things we have to understand, what's really being born and what's really dying. And I was reading, again, something I've quoted before from this woman who was in Edie Hillsom in the concentration camp, where they found her diaries after, you know, the concentration. She said, I've looked at our destruction. This is in the concentration camp. Our miserable end, straight in the eye, and accepted it into my life. And I continue to grow from day to day, even with death staring me in the face. For my life has been extended by death, living and dying, sorrow and joy, the blisters on my feet and the jasmine behind the barracks, the persecution, the unspeakable horrors. It is all as one in me, and I accept it all as one mighty whole. And that's, in a way, what we're trying, whenever you sit down to meditate, in a way you're trying to let go of things so you can accept it all as one mighty whole. That you're not saying, well, what we're usually doing, I want this piece and not that piece. On a practical level, yes, you want this piece. Just like on a practical level, Edie Hillsom would have loved to stopped all these people around her from suffering, would have liked to continue to live, would have had all those preferences. You know, that's... you know, and then she writes, we must surrender all that is dearest to us in the enjoyment of the senses and go through a dark night in which we live without their help and comfort. Then when this is accomplished, we have to sacrifice even our thoughts and our choices, and undergo even a still darkened night, deprived of our familiar supports. This is a kind of death. And when all of that has been strained away, our emptiness will be filled with a new presence. And that's what we're trying to that's what the letting go is. We have all these supports. You know, it's why the Buddha on his enlightenment you know, when the said, house builder, thou art seen, thou shalt build this house no more. The rafters and structures are broken. And that's the way we make our lives. We build it on things. Well, I'm this kind of person. I do this. I am accomplishing that. And it's not like it stands against that you do all this stuff, but you're not clinging to it. The same way as you can, you know, let go of things and realize it's not the important thing. You know, it's just, okay, good, I did this well, or this went well. I have this good feeling, this bad feeling. But when we're willing to face the darkness, which in a way is death, in a way often what we look at old age and deterioration as a darkness, or just when life isn't giving us what we want, which is a darkness. You know, so the expression light and darkness, you know, is used in almost every spiritual tradition because it feels dark, just like being depressed. Something is dark. Be happy. You know, I can remember, it's funny, one of my most unmitigated feelings of joy used to be when school ended, when I was in like second grade, because I would come out of school with like just this feeling of absolute joy. I mean, I'd be running around like just like life is so great. I don't have to, you know, do this for 2 whole months. And usually by the end of it, I was ready to go back to school. But on the other hand, that feeling of joy that felt light. But a lot of training is how can we see what's going on and see how we build the self? Because that's what's going to die. You know, it's like all these things we've built, we've made, we've created, all the importance we give, both to our successes and failures. Just like in talking to people, when I speak to people who do hospice, which, like, you know, Paula does, but other people, it's like when people are dying, nobody talks about their work, what they've accomplished, all the rest of it. It's like, that's not what's important, you know. And if you were going to die now, you wouldn't be thinking about your job or what it was, because that's really not the important thing. And just being aware of the body is just, life is you know, we grow for a while and then most of the rest of the time after the early 20s, it's just a steady process of deterioration, you know, of wearing things out. And if you don't like that, it's like wanting a river to flow north when it flows south. This is the flow. You're flowing towards old age, disease, and death. And you can't even think of another alternative. What do? You know, it's like, you know, we can't be the picture of Dorian Gray. You know, like, I'm not going to get older, or like movies where people get younger. You know, it's like some movie I haven't seen where the character gets younger throughout the movie. It's a nice fantasy to think of, but the reality is everything new becomes old. Everything wears out. Everything breaks down. Everything falls apart and comes back together, too. It's like the nice scientific principle I like, which is actually nothing can ever be gained or lost in the universe. Everything can only be transformed. When you set off a nuclear bomb, nothing is actually being gained or lost. It's just some matter becomes energy, which again will become matter, the same way as sunlight becomes plants. You know, energy becomes matter again. And then we burn the tree and it becomes... So a little bit of it becomes energy. You know, as I liked mentioning the other day, so I actually looked it up. If you took the energy in a sugar cube, converted it straight to energy, it would level the Bay Area.
It would level it or light it?
It would level the Bay Area. The amount of energy that was let off in the bomb in Hiroshima was a small part of one dime.
Oh, wow.
You know, so So, you know, but that's just science, a transformation. But it just means nothing is lost or gained ever, you know, except for things we don't understand, like where did the universe come from, you know, all these things, like, and which almost don't have an answer, because whatever the answer is, what happened before the answer? You know what I mean? It's like, wherever the beginning is, well, there has to be something before the beginning. Meaning you can never get to a beginning, because it's ill. It means it doesn't make sense. Meaning we probably don't understand something about what's going on very well. No, and that's why, in a way, when we practice, we can learn not to identify with the conditions that are passing through us. So in a way, when you meditate, you're not meditating as a young person, a middle-aged person, an old person. Of course, actually, that which is meditating, that which is aware, isn't the body, isn't old. It's watching a condition that isn't you, really. It's just a condition. It's why, actually, you often don't feel, it's like you look at your body and go, my mind isn't, you know, it's like, my mind could be young again. You know what I mean? You look at something and it's like, what's, you know, how did the body get here? Because in a way, you're not the body. And, you know, body is bound, but our real heart and mind isn't being bound. You know, unless we bind it by getting caught up in the dream of the importance of this or the importance of that. Just like I've often like using the image of people with locked-in syndrome, where they can't, not locked, locked-in, yeah, locked-in syndrome, where you can't, you're lying there and you can't do anything. People, until, you know, didn't even know you were, the mind was there, but you can't really respond to anything. And interestingly enough, when they do psychological, and actually I've read more psychological testing on people in that situation, when they psychologically test them, the only ones in that who have locked-in syndrome, where you can't do anything, you can't respond, you can't do anything. The only people who are depressed were already depressed when they became locked in. It didn't solve their depression necessarily, but it wasn't like anybody else actually was even depressed about it. Yet you think that isn't the condition. When we're healthy, any of us would want. In fact, most of us would think, hell no. You know, that's the last thing we want, is not to be able to do anything. But, you know, actually, that condition doesn't make you suffer, because the people doing it generally aren't suffering any more than anyone else is. You know, they're on all the psychological tests of them, they're doing fine, which points out that we, you know, look at, we make the suffering by how we respond to it. Just like getting old can be suffering and cannot be. It's what you're clinging to. You know, or even having ill health can be suffering or not suffering. Just like locked in can be suffering or not. And I'm sure people suffer with it, but people are suffering with everything. The world's full of people who are suffering because they don't like the traffic. Oh God, people don't drive well. Like, duh. Sometimes when people complain about other drivers, I say, move to New York. You would be grateful for the California drivers. Because it's noticeable that people are a lot more polite here and less aggressive, and because it's just a culture of what's appropriate and not. And he goes, says, I'm third world, some other countries, and you think, whoa. In fact, I remember being in India and I couldn't believe, I felt like I was in an action movie. I was the way the fellow was driving. He was a very good driver, but he was driving with his hand on the horn the whole time. It almost never left the horn because he wanted everyone to know that he's coming fast. And I realized he had to do that because people had to know that he was coming. Because he was driving very aggressively. But But it's important to realize that, in a way, see how we identify with what we do, what happened to us, where we're going, and realize you can just see these as conditions that don't really we have to hold on to. And part of training is slowly losing that grip that they have upon us. So we can see the past and realize, you know, as the Buddha said, the most direct way to enlightenment is realizing nothing is me and nothing is mine. And we do that by seeing when we grasp something and realize we can relax the grasp on it. We can try to see it less personally. Like the other expression I always like, take nothing personally. Interact with people. It makes people get along with you much better when I try not to take things personally. You know, even kind of, you know, and sometimes when I do it right, it even really changes people because they, you know, can think that they're criticizing you and you're not taking it personally, so it doesn't really matter, which is the reverse of the way the world often is, where you're supposed to take everything personally. Not that I always don't take anything personally, but I'm working on taking less personally. And sometimes I do it well and sometimes I don't, but, you know, so it's not like I don't expect you to take anything personally, but to take things less, you know, in a way, so we can find what's deeper and realize, so we don't have to bind ourselves. Wow, what does this person think of me? Think of all the energy we've given in our lives to what other people think of us. Why? Why do you care what people think of you? What significance is someone else's opinion of you? It's not even deeply significant what your opinion of yourself is, because it's just an opinion. And it usually doesn't have that much correlation to any reality. We think it does, but actually very rarely does it do it. As most of you have heard me say, because if you want to hear delusion, just have somebody describe themselves. And it's very rarely what you see when you see that person. You know, and it's amazing, you know, what how they view themselves, because usually they're viewing, we don't view ourselves very clearly. You know, and the less you cling to it, the less it matters. And then you can see things clearly, which is why we stop. The idea in Buddhism is by not clinging to things, then we can see things better. And the example of that almost everyone can relate is make a decision when you really want something or don't want something, and how hard it is to make the decision when the desire is really strong. You know, you'll say, what is right to do? But you really want this. What is right to do? And it's very hard to see what is right to do, because there's a gravitational pull, either of aversion or desire, that prevents you from seeing clearly what's good to do. Well, it doesn't matter to you what the result is, it's actually not that hard. And actually, if you're okay with making the wrong decision, it's much easier to make the right decision. But if it's like, oh God, what do I do? You know, we've all had that, like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? It's very hard if it means that much to you to see what it is to do, because your eyes will be clouded. You know, as a Sufi saying, eyes not clouded with desire. So how do we have eyes not clouded with desire? By realizing it's okay, whatever. I mean, we want to make the best decision. I don't purposely make bad decisions. Yet, no matter what I do, I make bad decisions. You know, sometimes, because that's the nature of things. You don't always know what to do. But if I'm okay with making the wrong choice, then it doesn't bind me. It just means, oh, I'll deal with this karma. Like, oh, you know, should I stay or go? And, you know, if you have to get it right, it's hard to do. You know, and we have to kind of see and start to understand that all these experiences we have now are like a dream. You know, why are we letting them bind? And even if they were good, so what now? Just like when you're suffering now, it doesn't matter that you were happy a year ago. You know, it's almost like trying to eat yesterday's dinner when you're hungry today. It's like, okay, that was nice. But now it's almost like you're dreaming of dinner. And did it really matter they had a good dinner or a bad dinner? You know, it's almost like clinging to a good or bad dream. You know, now that you're here now, what difference does it make that, well, that was a good lunch. Or, wow, that was a good movie. Or, wow, I enjoyed being with that person. Even being at the Priory is like a dream when you leave it. But actually, if you can get the teaching to your heart, you can apply it to where you are right now. And that's a value. That's seeing the Dharma. And that can free you wherever you are and realize you don't have to be bound in the situation. But the fact that you felt something at the Priory doesn't matter. Even a great insight, unless you apply the insight, you know, it's almost like talking about letting things go, and the only thing that matters is, do you let them go? Not, wow, that was a good talk on it. You know, it's like a good taste, a bad taste, something's pleasurable, something's painful, something's beautiful, something's ugly. Okay, why does it have any significance? What is a significance? Think of looking at something beautiful. A lot of people spend a lot of energy just, you know, to, I want things beautiful. Okay, why? I mean, it's nice for things to look nice and it's pleasurable. You know, we just planted some bulbs in the garden. When they come up, I'll think, wow, that's nice. But on the other hand, then they'll be gone. And you know, the flowers wilt, and you know, and truthfully, if we didn't have flowers, that would be fine too. You know what I mean? If they're not there, it's not of any significance. You know, and just like someone, you know, I've met, you know, which kind of causes suffering, somebody who is very attractive, particularly females when they're young, and then they get older and suddenly they're ignored. And it's like, oh, this really hurts. You know, and you realize, well, actually, you're going to live most of your life being ignored for your looks, because that's the nature of things. You know, if you live a normal life, most of your adult life, you're not this young, pretty thing. You know, you're, you know, and really, did it matter that people, you know, is that really what matters? And in fact, it just caused suffering because you clung to it when you're young, and then when it's not there, just like somebody who thinks that's what's you know, and nothing is me and nothing is mine is actually seeing in each a transience in reality. You know, your relationships are all going to come and go. Just like I saw in the, you know, obituary about Kirk Douglas, who managed to make it to 103, which is amazing. I think since he had that bad, a lot of you knew, you know, I remember 20 years ago he had a dreadful stroke, and you know, there he is living another, you know, you have a bad stroke when you're 80 and you're 83 or something, or you think, oh, and he made it to 103. Pretty good shape, it sounded like, in the sense he was active, mentally together. I saw a nice article his rabbi wrote about interacting with him, because he, you know, he would even kind of complain, God in this section isn't very nice, which is the Old Testament. Yeah, he's rather unpleasant. But one of the things they had is that all his contemporaries were gone. I mean, he's 103, almost nobody, you know, all the people, you know, he had seen almost everyone die who he had worked with, done things with, you know, for most of his career, and the, probably the years that mattered most to him, you know, his kind of thing. And so it's important to kind of look at things, and but if you don't cling, you can be happy with what's, find joy in what's there now. If you just think in terms of, wow, this person's not around anymore, yes, it'll hurt when sometimes there'll be a painful thought or a painful sensation. Just like if somebody dies you care about, it hurts. But if you don't cling to it, it'll hurt sometimes, just like you'll think of somebody. I'll think of somebody who's died and think, oh, it's a shame they're not around anymore. But and then you let go of it and get on with it, you know. You know, just like if you look at conditions like old age or illness and think that's causing you to suffer, it's wrong. Our delusions, our wrong views are causing us to suffer. You know, that's where the suffering's from. It's not from what's happening to us. It's how we look at what's happening to us. Anyway, stop. Anybody have anything they want to bring up? You know, as you all deal with birth and death. Yeah, Chris?
You know, toward the beginning of today's talk, you mentioned, I think, maybe a reading from some other place that talked about a sense of presence. Do you think that meditation leads to, that enhances that kind of feeling?
Oh, yeah.
A sense of presence?
Oh, yeah.
In other words, like for a long time, you know, I was raised in this very Catholic tradition, and God's up there in heaven, and so on and so on. And then I kind of destroyed all that. You know, just, you know, it really, I did away with it. But still, there is, I feel that kind of lack, you might say, a sense of like something around me, that sort of feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole purpose of Buddhism is to find what's deeper than ourselves, and that is a presence of, you know, it's like they'll say Buddhism, like one way of defining Buddhist practice is we're searching for the heart of Buddha. We're not searching for our heart, we're searching for the Buddha heart, which is a presence of much more, to realize if you die, what's real in you isn't going. You know, you're not, and there's something boundless embracing us, and part of us is embracing that if we let go of the self, because we're, you know, it's like the one I like quoting, every Buddha and every ancestor realizes he's the same as a limitless sky and as great as a universe. You know, so we get a sense, and it's why in every spiritual tradition people will describe spiritual experiences in much the same way, what you experience, but then you can define it as this God or something that from a Buddhist point of view you're adding, you know, adding on a concept to God that's not there, like, oh, God is this or that, or God's in control, or God's making this happen. Well, when you let go of the self, everything is the Buddha, and everything is that presence. And, you know, and that's why you can feel embraced, why when people are suffering, they can feel like they're being embraced in something warm, or even, you know, an example of just from a non, in a way that came up in a non-spiritual context, it's the book by Jill Ball Taylor, where she spoke about when she just had a brain stroke, you know, and she had a stroke of insight because she felt this boundless thing embracing her that freed her, even though it was caused by a stroke. You know, so we're trying to do it without the stroke because I don't know how to manipulate that. You know, most strokes don't seem to help. So, you know, it's not like, you know. You know, so I've spoken to many people with strokes, and most of them have not had that. But the right stroke opens something, an awareness in it, just like the way, you know. So part of it is to recognize we're in the presence, you know, as, you know, the woman who was in the concentration camp said, when all has been strained away, which is basically all our, the way we're clinging to conditions and losing ourselves in the conditions. But you think she was in a concentration camp, very easy to get lost in, you know, as somebody else I like quoting said, everyone else here was trying not to be here. They were dreaming of being somewhere else. The fellow who helped him there, he said, Jeremy was the only one who wasn't dreaming. He was fully where he was, seeing everything and finding joy. Finding the presence of much more. And people, you know, I mean, I'll talk to people, you know, something will happen and they'll, you know, we'll force that, we'll help them let go of things. And suddenly they realize, you know, just like often when people are, have near-death experiences where they're brought back, they're often realized that there's nothing to fear in dying, that they're not their body and they're not whatever this is. Which frees them from a lot of the fear and the importance that they give to what's going on in their lives. You know, it's not like it's unimportant, but it doesn't have the importance we give it. You know, like, oh, I have to get this done, or this is so important, or, you know, the way we just get lost in this dream of the importance we give all the things that we're doing. You know, and that's why what we really want is to find the place that, you know, as she puts it, you know, we want to find, you know, the, and be filled with a new presence, because that's really the enlightenment that we're seeking in Buddhism, you know, to realize what's real, our real body, you know, and we do that by seeing how we make the self and trying to let go of the pieces of the importance we give ourselves. And if we don't think you're doing that, the image I always like giving is, all you'd have to do is think if you had a printout of your daily thoughts, how self-absorbed you are. The importance you give. All these things that aren't really important. And you're getting lost in, you know, the same way as why do people get upset with so many things? You know, why are we not at peace with conditions? And whenever we're not at peace, that's a Dharma teaching for us. What are we doing? You know, because when we're not at peace, in a way, we're lost in this dream of birth and death. Yeah.
Bodhidharma talks, like, when I think about death, there's two things. There's the false self is like, I don't think I want to die today. And the true self is that there's absolutely no problem if I died tomorrow. You know, and I believe that when I think about it. I know I believe that, but, you know, thinking all day, yeah, I'm fine with death, I'm fine with death. There's always two things going on. There's always the, I don't want to die today. And there's always the, I know there's absolutely no problem with dying today. There's those.
Don't worry. Stop caring about how you feel about it. You're not trying to control. It's fine if you don't like, you know, it doesn't matter how you feel about something. You know, so it's not like, wow, I'm okay with dying or I'm not okay. Who cares?
Well, I think the point is that more, it's just one example of how there's always these two levels, the level of the false self and the level of the true self. And you're always dealing with both, and that's the birth and death aspect of, you know.
Well, the important thing to deal with is just see how you can let go of things.
Yeah.
You're not dealing with how you view death. You're dealing with what you're clinging to in life.
Everything, yeah.
You know, so that's where the real birth is. So it's not like, wow, if I understand things better, I won't be worried about death. Because as long as you're clinging to things, it's going to be a problem. The problem is the clinging. I want this and not that. Oh, you know, I'm not worried about death. The same way as you can think, oh, I'm not worried about death, but I don't want to be ill. You know. You know.
I want to be there when it happens.
And realizing, you know, it's seeing how we make the self and dissolving it, which is the training, to see the pieces. And that's where the problem is, not in, wow, how I feel about something, because that's just karma. The fact that if death comes up, you know, just like there's a famous one with famous Zen story where some Zen master was attacked and killed, and he was showed signs of being, you know, fear and other things seemed to come up, and the person's asking his master, you know, why was he, you know, he says, you know, why wasn't he okay with dying? And in the Zen story, the master just hit the disciples, just told him, you idiot. You know, because naturally, if somebody, you know, somebody is doing something, you know, the response is appropriate to be, you know, that's just the normal response. The same way as if somebody needs help, I'm concerned, you know, if I'm one of you suddenly had an accident, suddenly I'm responding to it, and if somebody comes with me at a knife, or I'm in a car that looks like it's about to have an accident. On the other hand, I remember somebody very nicely, there was a journal article I remember that actually reprinted ages ago in the newsletter, about somebody who was always terrified of driving, of accidents and driving. It was like her fear, her phobia was. And then she had two major accidents in her life. And when each of them happened, she said, there was a perfectly good driver who took over. And she wasn't afraid. And, you know, so the title of the article was, Who's Driving? And then, of course, she said, how come I can't do this the rest of the time? You know, it's like, you know, there's this perfectly good driver that knows that it doesn't have fear and can handle whatever it is that's there. And most of the time I'm not in touch with it. And the important thing isn't whether how you get in touch with, you know, because in a way that's just karma. You know, I can't control that I'm afraid of something. That's just a feeling coming up. The trick is, what do I tell myself? And how do I see how I can actually let go of the clinging? Like, if I'm scared of something, I can tell myself, it's okay. You know, give that delusion the Dharma, and realize it's okay that it's broke, you know, that I broke something, or, you know, just like the suffering I had, like, you know, or just let go of whatever it is. You know, just like modern life, the Wi-Fi here is having problems, and it's like, oh, suffering, Wi-Fi's down. You know, I try to do something, and suddenly you can't do what you're supposed to be doing. Not that it's that bad, and just to see that, okay, you know, what is it? And give the teaching to it, because there's always pieces of ourselves. You know, we have endless attachments, desires, fears, wants. And the problem isn't that they're there. The problem is, what do we do when they arise? Because they're all a Dharma teaching for us. When you see the Dharma, you see the me. And the Dharma is when we're not at peace, when something bothers us, we're being critical, upset, angry, fearful. How do we respond to it and use it as something to point of where we need to work on, rather than a problem?
Yeah. I'm thinking this is really helpful. Hearing it doesn't matter if you're scared, that's karma. I was thinking about the eclipse and seeing being there, and there it was. You know, it really makes you small, and realize your size and importance. And in that moment, there was awe, but also terror. Like this, if the sun went out, it would take, you know, a couple nights for us all to freeze to death and the earth would die, etc. And it was a real experience of it because it was freezing cold. And I've always, yeah, I've always known there was a teaching in there, and yet my whole body goes, no, it was terror, you know, like don't think that way, like it would be okay if everything's annihilated, you know. So it's all there.
Yeah. Well, it's everything, you have to remember that all things come together and fall apart, yeah. So things will be just the same way as whatever you care about will die or fall apart, anicca. And from a Buddhist point of view, yeah, worlds, things come tomorrow. What was that I heard? That when the thing that caused the dinosaurs to go, when it hit, it shot a flame that almost reached the moon. You know,
how did they figure that out?
Well, I mean, they kind of figured. I mean, they just figured the what the effect was, and I mean, it's all obviously a guess in the sense they can't be 100%. But you know, I mean, but one of the things that happened is all of North America went up in a fire.
Right.
That they're pretty certain of. And actually, parts of India went up too, so in a fire, you know, because they can find the remnants of it all over the, you know, of the fact that that just went through everything. And yeah, and something like that literally could happen, because we actually don't, you know, something else could hit or something else could happen. But it's no different, the death of big things and little things, they're always being born and dying. And from a Buddhist point of view, nothing will, you know, nothing will fundamentally be lost, you know, and, you know, I have no doubt that, you know, there's nothing to fear. And if, you know, and truthfully, I don't think I've dealt with all my karma, so some way I'm coming back. I'm even making a bodhisattva vow, so I'm willing to come back. But whether I like it or not, I think I have more to do in this. You know, I'm pretty sure I haven't dealt with all my karma enough yet. So, you know, I'm a long way from full enlightenment. So, you know, that has to be done. But it is whatever it is, and we realize everything falls apart. You know, just big picture, little picture, and that truthfully, the something disastrous could happen. You know, just like when people talk about, you know, global warming. One of the things is just scientifically, big enough volcano goes, it'll stop it for 10 years, mm-hmm. reverse it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, however, we probably don't want that big volcano to go because, you know, just like somebody was listening to a science show and somebody asked questions on the show and somebody said, you know, you always hear about nuclear winter. Well, why don't we just cause a nuclear winter? It'll take care of global warming. The scientist said, it would be a lot easier just to stop using carbon dioxide than set off an endless nuclear bombs that are going to cause all this radiation and everything else and all these other effects. But yeah, that would...
You can have electric cars or a nuclear winter.
Yeah, it's like, it seems like a nuclear winter wouldn't be the best way to stop global warming. But however, it would stop it. But actually, you know, and the world is our mind spinning with these concerns, these desires, these fears. And when we allow it to fill ourselves with its importance, not that we don't deal with it, but the importance we give it, we make and bind ourselves with suffering. Same way you can get caught up in the news and suddenly there's a problem somewhere and you're suffering with it. And it's the nature, and I mean, it's not wrong that you feel some suffering with the world's suffering. I mean, I'll hear a story about refugees and it'll be like, you know, it hurts to hear all the suffering. But there's always a suffering. I mean, there's always, it's like when I was growing up, there was a TV show where it was The Naked City. There's 8 million stories going on in The Naked City. And, you know, and there's always a lot of things going, you know, there's always a lot of suffering, a lot of things going wrong, obviously, ever, you know, and that's the nature of it. But to realize that the conditions don't belong to us, and trying to try to take the touch, even our body doesn't really belong to us. It belongs to the world almost like trees do and cars do and everything else do, and we don't really possess it. You know, it's by convention ours, just like this place. We've all agreed this property is part of Albany, and you can build on this, and you own this place, but it's just a convention. It's like saying, I own the sky. I own this, you know, rights, you know. You know, and not wanting to be, an image I like, I remember reading somewhere, it was like, not wanting to get old and die is like a chicken wanting to be a duck. You know, it sounds like the Marx Brothers. You know, or, you know. But actually, if we let go, peace and joy can fill us and fills the universe. And it's unbounded. It's neither ours nor theirs. It's just the way it is. You know, and that's the presence that we can find. It doesn't mind how you define it. You know, and it's like, you know, if we're not careful in life, we keep trying to go somewhere and do something, and we're not finding a real resting place. And I remember when I first started to practice, I thought, I want to find the place where I can just stop having to find things so hard. And I realized that's the real resting place, is realizing it doesn't matter whether you're finding it hard or easy. You know, if you let things go, you can find what's really matters. And the fact that you have to do stuff doesn't matter. You know, and we can be at peace and still and just be dealing with the stuff, dealing, you know, dealing with it and not getting bound by it.